Thank you for turning up, and we'll begin. I'd like to start by acknowledging the Ngunnawal people and the fact that we're holding this symposium on their land. I'd also like to acknowledge all Aboriginal people present. Now, my name is Paul McGee. I'm at the University of Canberra, and I'm part of the consortium of people who are putting this event on. I'll introduce you to the other people in our research team in a little while. But just from the outset, I would like also to thank the Humanities Research Centre here in the College of Arts and Social Sciences at the ANU, and in particular, Professor Will Christie and Penny Brew for all the material support and assistance with putting this event on. And I'd also like to thank the Centre for Creative and Cultural Research at the University of Canberra, and in particular, Professor Jen Webb and Katie Hayne, again, for material and other forms of support in making this day possible. Now, I'm going to give a brief introduction to the issues that we're here to explore today. I'll start with a few comments on why we're looking at this topic, and I'll then turn to some brief remarks on just the program for the day to follow. So, why look at writing as discovery? I'll start with a quote from a poet. Now, the quote comes from an interview conducted in the course of an ARC project entitled Understanding Creative Excellence. I worked on the project with Jen Webb, who I just mentioned, and also Kevin Brophy. It involved interviewing 75 Anglophone poets about a variety of issues. One of the prominent ones was the question of what sort of planning goes into their work. So I'll show you a quote from the British poet Don Paterson, one of the most acclaimed poets, Anglophone poets of the 21st century. Here's what Don told us about composition. If you have a good idea for a poem, it isn't. Now, this might sound a bit dour. It might sound like he's trying to discourage others, but actually not. Actually, what Paterson is conveying here is an ethos about what he thinks a poem is. For him, it is an improvised and provisional response to whatever is just coming to light at that moment in the compositional process. Later in that interview, he said to Kevin, "A poem is almost a documentary record of an epiphany that has taken place in the course of its own making. You have to come to the page with nothing, an urge to speak without really knowing why." So the point for Paterson, speaking here about poetry, is that as poets, we discover what we know in the act of writing it. I'll add that this is a very common idea among poets, as these same interviews I've just referred to established. There are myriad examples I could point to. I'll show you just one other because it takes Paterson's comment in an interesting direction. So this is the poet and critic Alison Croghan. And in this case, I was asking Alison about the research that goes into her poetry. "I usually have no idea what it, my poetry, will be and what shape it will have until I get to the end. It's very hard to research for something when you don't know what it's going to be. To take a broader view and to think in terms of reading, writing, walking around, I'm researching all the time. Only I wouldn't think of it as research. I don't know what I think it is." Like I just suggested, it's very interesting to compare Alison Croghan's comments here with Don's, because what she indicates is that even though the thinking in her poem emerges in the moment of composition, there is often a background of prior cognition and prior experience to what's actually emerging in that moment. To take that perspective on board, you might say we discover new ideas in the act of writing because some part of us has already been thinking them. Actually, we could draw examples from many other art forms at this point as well. Statements by novelists, by painters, by filmmakers, by sculptors. In there and many other art forms, we find cases where artists insist, when asked about the knowledge informing their work, that they discover what they know or what they've been thinking about without being aware of it in the very act of producing the work. Now, our project was inspired by consideration of just the sort of materials that I've put before you. And it takes the form of a question. If this is what happens, at least some of the time, in the creative arts, what about in other areas of knowledge production? Could writing serve as a vehicle for discovery in those fields as well? On the face of it, it might sound a little crazy to suggest that scholars and scientists might not know what they're about to say until they have said it. It would be crazy were we suggesting that thinking is coming out of nowhere. But what if we start to ponder the possibility that Croghan describes in the quote above, that what comes to us in the compositional moment is the thinking we've already on some level been doing about material on some level already familiar to us? I think once we take that qualification on board, the link between the insights we've seen here on the nature of poetic discovery and scholarly and scientific writing, the potential link, becomes more feasible. But what's really convinced us that there's a topic to explore here is that we've started, as we've been pondering it and asking other scholars, other scientists about this topic, we've found all sorts of interesting corroborations for this idea that there is some sort of link between writing and discovering. That in the university here, writing is not simply a matter of writing up, that it actually has a generative and productive role. So part of that corroboration is from talking to people, and part of it is from the rare but nonetheless very interesting research on this topic. There's not much, but what's there is very fascinating. I'll briefly cite an example of each of these domains, just further to open up the issues for the day, and then I'll introduce you to what we're going to do and some of the key speakers. So earlier this year, I produced a pilot study, and that involved interviews with three very successful professors in the humanities and social sciences. I talked to one linguist and two literary scholars. So it was a very selective sample, but the idea was just to see what would happen when we interviewed people for an hour on these sort of topics and just see what they said. One of the people I talked to was Derek Attridge, who is an emeritus professor of English at the University of York. Highly esteemed scholar, a member of the British Academy, author of landmark works on both prosody and the philosophy of literature. Google Scholar, for instance, notes 1,039 citations for his book, The Singularity of Literature. I'll cite briefly from that interview, in which I asked a suite of questions about Derek's writing practices and the role discovery plays in them. Now, at the point in the interview I'm about to take you to, Professor Attridge was telling me how immersive he finds the practice of writing. And he made it clear in the process that he takes more pleasure in revising than in coming up with the initial draft. That exchange led to the following interaction. Interviewer, me. You haven't referred to planning. Attridge. I'm not one of those people who make a detailed plan in advance. It depends, of course, on the kind of project I'm engaged in. But if there is a spectrum, which I suspect there is, between knowing what you're going to say beforehand and discovering what you want to say while writing it, I would be very much on the discovering it while writing it end. This sounds quite resonant with what we heard before from Don Patterson and Alison Croghan. Only this is a professor and one of the most distinguished professors in his field. And I might add that I found this a real shock because I plan things intricately and I aspire to the logic and clarity of Attridge's writing. And there he was telling me that it's totally unplanned. Which actually, as the interview proceeded, it became clear that Attridge is not simply making it up. I will certainly start a shorter project like an article with some ideas and a few sketch notes. they'll be about whatever reading I've done towards the piece. It might be new reading, or it might be reading that I did a long time ago, but I won't have the various stages of the argument mapped out. I will start writing, and as I do, if I'm lucky, where I want to go will become clearer. Now, in the previous slide I showed you, we saw Attridge refer to a spectrum. A spectrum between knowing what you're going to say beforehand and discovering what you want to say while writing it. The idea of some such spectrum has come up often in our preliminary discussions with people and also in that pilot study, which I've just referred to. Many humanities scholars in particular have confirmed, yes, they often don't know what they're about to write exactly before they've written it, but also that this probably doesn't pertain to other disciplines. Writing, they've suggested, is far more likely to be premeditated in more quantitative areas like the sciences. Now, Attridge himself did not say this, but other people have said that a spectrum probably exists, and the spectrum will go from the humanities, where the compositional method is much more ad hoc, and the sciences, where writing will have a much more instrumental function, and instrumental in the sense of just conveying a message that has already been resolved. So the assumption seems to be, from those conversations, again, we're just working with informal materials at the moment, that you perform the experiment and then you report on it, and that the last thing you should be doing is allowing any creativity to intervene in the passage between the two. As the historian of medical science Frederick Holmes put it, I will certainly start a shorter project like an article with some ideas. Oh, sorry, he didn't put that at all. Here's Holmes. A scientific paper may be treated as presenting a creative achievement, but it is not itself taken as a creative achievement. Scientific papers are generally viewed only as vehicles for conveying information. Now, this is certainly a widespread image of scientific writing. But the curious fact is that some of the most detailed and far-reaching research on our very topic, writing as discovery, has actually come from studies of the sciences. I'm going to cite just one example now, further ramifying our contention that writing's function as a vehicle for discovery could actually be far more widespread in scholarly and scientific work than a common wisdom would have it. Now, that example actually comes from this article, from this piece by Frederick Holmes. For Holmes rehearses these opinions, but the reason he does so is he thinks they're wrong. So as I indicated, Holmes is a historian of medical science, and he's interested in the path of that field from the Enlightenment into the present. This particular article concerns the famous 18th century scientist Antoine Lavoisier, the so-called father of modern chemistry. As you'll see him cited here on this first day cover. I'm sorry if this is a little kitsch, but I like postage stamps. Now, Holmes' specific focus in this paper is a paper of Lavoisier's called Experiments on the Respiration of Animals and on the Changes Which Take Place in the Air in Passing Through the Lungs. This is a paper which was published in 1780. Holmes shows that the paper went through six drafts over 6 months. The final draft held the theory that we now attribute to Lavoisier, that oxygen is converted to carbon dioxide after we breathe it in. The first three drafts of this paper, Lavoisier actually espoused a different theory on the basis of the very same facts. He held that oxygen is absorbed by the lungs and then replaced by carbon dioxide, which is breathed out, but there's no necessary passage between one and the other. That third draft contained the triumphant statement, "I believe that the theory of respiration has been established." The fourth draft drops that statement. And in the fourth draft, there's evidence of this other point of view starting to emerge, the one that we now attribute to that paper and to Lavoisier. So what Holmes shows is that over the fifth and sixth drafts, Lavoisier increasingly revised his views of the very same facts to conclude on something much closer to the view we hold today, and thank him for. Harms concludes, Lavoisier apparently acquired some of his crucial insights in the process of writing out his ideas. The new developments were consequences of the effort to express ideas and marshal supporting information on paper. Now, I turn to this example in particular because Lavoisier is often held up as the one who turned chemistry from a qualitative to a quantitative science. But Frederick Harms is here saying, actually, a fair component of those discoveries came about in the act of writing. And not just in the case of this specific paper, but in many, many papers in the Lavoisier archives that Harms looked into. There are other sources for the generative role of writing in scientific discovery, which we could turn to at this point, including Holmes' interviews with the 1953 Nobel laureate Hans Krebs, who furthered Lavoisier's work on our body's processing of oxygen with his discovery of the Krebs cycle. We could also look at the intriguingly named writing to learn tradition within science pedagogy, which actually has a great deal to say on our topic. Again, it's fascinating. The most far-reaching research on this topic is in the sciences. So we could head in these directions, but actually we have two professors here who are far more informed on these topics than me, and I'll turn to them very shortly. I think what I've put up above is already sufficient to suggest that there really is a question here and that there's something to explore. There's a question, or rather a set of them, which we might, if we want, put in some such form. To what extent do scholars and scientists make discoveries in the act of writing? And we could break that down into a few specific questions, such as, what specific aspects of writing are associated with discovery? Does it come about in planning, assuming one plans? Does it come about in free writing? Does it come about in the act of revising? Is it something that often occurs when responding to critique or review, whether formal or informal? This is some of the questions that we'd like to elucidate through studying this matter further. Further, are there cogent distinctions in the practice of writing as discovery across disciplines? Is it correct that there is a spectrum and that in some way practices are very different, say, from the humanities across to the sciences? Further, are there large variations between individuals within one and the same discipline? There's some of the ways we could cut the cake as to the sort of questions we have in front of us, but I'm sure there's many others. Just putting these up to prompt some discussion as we go. Now, as for today, I referred to a consortium before. So we're introducing you today to a research project that is already underway, inviting your responses and participation in generating some of these ideas and questions. The team is myself, Dr. Lucy Neave, Professor Yvonne Patterson, Professor Ross Gibson, and Professor Will Christie, all of whom are present and all of whom will be presenting at some point in the day. So you'll come to meet people and be formally introduced to them in terms of bios as well shortly. So we're all presenting in various formats. Now, the research that we have in mind to conduct in future years will be largely interview-based, along the model of that earlier research project I referred to before, which involved interviewing a plethora of poets and finding interesting patterns in their responses. We'll also be devoting quite a bit of this task to conducting case studies, performing micro-histories of the composition of specific breakthrough works. Now, actually, we're going to enact some of this for you today because you'll see some interviews here and you'll also see some attempts to establish something like at least an impressionistic case study of how certain breakthrough works were composed. So some of that you'll see exemplified today. As for the specific course of the day, We're going to start with a panel investigating what generative role writing might have to play in the sciences. So shortly I'll be asking Professor Yvonne Patterson and Professor Peter Doherty to address you on this topic. I'll then ask Yvonne and Peter some questions about the composition of specific breakthrough articles. We'll then open the floor to any questions of your own. That'll be followed by a morning tea break. We've allowed quite a lot of time for the breaks as well, because the idea is to provide a space where people can talk. We really want to make this as dialogic as possible. Now, after the morning tea break, we'll turn to a perspective from the social sciences. Lucy is going to interview Professor Alison Booth, who is a professor of economics here at the ANU and also a novelist. So that'll happen in between the morning tea and the lunch break. And again, there'll be time for questions from the floor and for interaction. After lunch, there'll be a panel of papers from humanities scholars. And those papers will come from the remaining members of the research team I mentioned earlier, and also Associate Professor Saskia Boydell is going to make a contribution to that panel as well. Finally, we'll have a workshop where we'll ask you to split into groups and to ask yourselves some of the sort of questions where workshopping and thinking are the right ones to pose to people about their compositional practices. And we're hoping you'll have ideas for us as to what are interesting questions, what are not interesting questions, where the real issues are here. The aim, like I said, is to keep the space as dialogic and as porous as possible. So we've opted for many dialogic formats. Dialogue between people on stage, but also we're hoping for much dialogue with you in the audience. So with those remarks, we're going to shift gears a bit. I'm going to ask Peter to come up. I'll make a brief introduction, and then I'll ask Peter to talk. Did you want to speak from the table, Peter?
I'll stand up.
Yeah, okay, great.